Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Phil Dierking, Alice Bryant, and Bruce Albert. Later, Anna Mateo will have this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
People living in the American territory of Puerto Rico have voted to become a U.S. state. However, the vote does not have the force of law. Only 23% of Puerto Rican voters took part in the referendum. Of those who did vote, about 500,000 chose statehood. About 7,500 chose independence, and 6,700 voted to remain a territory. People who live on the Caribbean island are U.S. citizens, but they cannot vote in presidential elections. They have one congressional representative to the United States Congress, who has limited voting rights. The island also has its own legislature, with a Senate and a House of Representatives. The territory's governor, Ricardo Rosselló, said of the vote, "In any democracy, the expressed will of the majority that participates in the electoral process always prevails." Sunday's vote on the issue of statehood was the fifth of its kind. People on the island also voted in 2012 to seek statehood. The vote took place as Puerto Rico seeks protection from its creditors who hold its large public debt. Peter Hackam is a former president of the Inter-American Dialogue, a policy research group on the Americas. He said the vote is not too meaningful because of low participation. He says competing political parties on the island have called for something other than statehood. The Popular Democratic Party wants Puerto Rico to remain a territory, while the Puerto Rican Independence Party wants the island to become a separate country. Hackam says the vote takes place as the island faces a serious crisis.
Puerto Rico is in the midst of a severe economic and, in many respects, social crisis, with large-scale immigration toward the United States.
He says poor supervision of the Puerto Rican economy and government is partly to blame for its economic situation. He says the island's current status is in what he calls the undefined zone, in which it is neither a state nor a country.
My guess in the end that Puerto Rico would probably be better off if it did become a state.
Puerto Ricans do not pay federal income tax, so the territory does not receive as much federal money as states do. But the people do pay Social Security and some other U.S. taxes. This causes some people to believe that the island would be better off as a state. However, Puerto Rico's debt crisis continues to harm its economic growth and ties to the U.S. The economy has been in recession for more than 10 years. Puerto Rico says it cannot pay back its more than $70 billion debt. The territory also owes its retirement payment plan, or pension, about $50 billion. Last month, Governor Rosselló refused to agree to measures demanded by creditors to make payments on the island's bonds. That started a process for Puerto Rico to seek legal protection from its creditors through a form of bankruptcy. However, the territory is barred from the kind of legal bankruptcy that U.S. cities and towns can seek. It is unclear how long Puerto Rico's debt negotiations will take. I'm Mario Ritter.
United States officials have accused 33 people of criminal activity, including stealing 4,500 kilograms of chocolate and a murder-for-hire plot. Murder-for-hire is when someone offers to pay an individual to kill another person. Federal law enforcement officials in New York City announced the charges last week. All those charged have ties to a Russian organized crime group that operated throughout the United States, said Jun Kim. He is the acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. William Sweeney Jr. is with the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation. He said that the 33 people charged in the case tried to make as much money as possible, all allegedly organized and run by a man who promised to protect them. But that protection didn't include escaping justice, Sweeney added. Kim said the 33 defendants are accused of what he called a dizzying number of crimes. He said the Russian criminal group is known as Shuleya Enterprises. The charges include stealing a shipment of 4,500 kilograms of chocolate. That is equal to over 80,000 candy bars. Another reported crime involved a female member of Shuleya Enterprises. She would seduce men, suggesting a love interest, and then use a gas to put them to sleep before stealing their money. The murder-for-hire effort, the government said, involved an offer to kill someone in exchange for money. Other crimes were transportation and sale of untaxed cigarettes, plans to pay bribes to law enforcement officials, and efforts to cheat casinos in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. The casino fraud case involved the use of electronics and computers to predict when and which electronic slot machines would pay off prize money, the government said. Shuleya Enterprises members used code words to communicate to each other, to make it more difficult for the government to listen to their discussions, the government said. The defendants were mostly born in the former Soviet Union and had strong ties to Ukraine, Georgia, and Russia, the government said. Acting U.S. Attorney Kim said the crimes were carried out throughout the United States. In the American justice system, a judge or jury of people decide if a defendant charged with a crime is guilty or not guilty. If the person is found guilty, a judge will decide what the punishment will be, including time in prison and financial fines. I'm Phil Dierking.
President Donald Trump's wife, Melania, and their 11-year-old son, Barron, have officially moved into the White House. She and the boy had been living at the family's home at Trump Tower in New York City so that Barron could finish out the year at his current school. In keeping with American tradition, President Trump moved to Washington, D.C. immediately after he took office in January. Since then, he has lived in the White House, one of the most famous buildings in the world. Melania Trump announced the move Sunday on Twitter. She wrote, "Looking forward to the memories we'll make in our new home. Hashtag moving day." Her announcement included a picture of the Washington Monument as seen from a room inside the White House. The president spent last weekend away from the White House. He went to one of his golf properties in the state of New Jersey. Melania Trump has not been as visible as other presidents' wives since choosing to stay with Barron in New York. But she has slowly begun taking on more official White House duties. She also recently joined the president on his first major overseas trip. Her move to Washington was expected. Trump had repeatedly said his wife and son would be joining him in the White House after the current school year. Barron has been attending Columbia Grammar and Preparatory School in New York City. Melania Trump announced last month that Barron would begin attending a private school just outside of Washington in the state of Maryland later this year. The school, St. Andrew's Episcopal School, is about 30 kilometers from the White House. In a statement at the time, the First Lady said the family chose St. Andrew's because of its commitment to know and inspire each child in an inclusive community. She added that the school's program combines teaching, learning, and service, all of which appealed to our family. The cost for Barron to attend the school is reported to be about $44,000 a year, about the same cost as his former school in New York. Former President Barack Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama chose to send their daughters to Sidwell Friends School, a private school in Washington, D.C. Chelsea Clinton also attended Sidwell Friends while living in the White House during the presidency of Bill Clinton.
The mosquito is a troublesome and sometimes dangerous insect. Their bites itch and can carry dangerous diseases like malaria, Zika virus, and yellow fever. Recently, researchers from Britain and Japan discovered how mosquitoes fly. This knowledge, they say, may help find ways to stop mosquitoes from spreading diseases in the future. Mosquito wings are small and have an uncommon shape. Because of this, it is hard to believe that they are able to fly. So, how is their flight possible? The team of scientists from Britain and Japan solved the mystery. They used high-speed cameras and computer images to understand the mechanics of how the insect moves its wings to stay in the air. Researchers at the University of Oxford took images of mosquito wing movements. They set up 8 super high-speed cameras that take 10,000 images each second. Simon Walker is a researcher at the University of Oxford.
So normally to record an insect, you need at least 2 cameras, ideally more, in order to have got enough views of an insect. Because with 2 camera views, you can then take any point on an insect and calculate its 3D coordinates.
The insect has 2 antennae, or tall, thin organs on its head, that it uses to feel things. But its antennae and 6 legs make it difficult to take clear images of the wing movements. So, the team needed to use 8 cameras to view the wings from many directions. The extra cameras let the researchers see that the mosquito's wings move 800 times each second. That is 4 times faster than many insects of a similar size. Mosquitoes fly by moving their wings in several different directions. The thin top edges of their wings move forward first, and then they reverse direction and move down. The movement looks almost as if the wings are drawing the number 8. The research team believes the mosquito's wing movements could help inventors design new flying devices. Walker says that existing unmanned flying devices, or drones, do not work very well outside because wind can affect their flight.
Insects, on the other hand, deal really, really well with even quite windy conditions. So understanding how they can do this is going to be advantageous to us in the future.
The researchers say that, more importantly, understanding how mosquitoes fly might help find ways to stop them from spreading diseases. I'm Alice Bryant.
Actor Ben Platt plays a lonely teenager who has trouble fitting in. So, when he won the Tony Award Sunday night for Best Actor in a Musical, he urged young people not to give up the qualities that make them special.
To all the young people watching at home, don't waste any time trying to be like anybody but yourself, because the things that make you strange are the things that make you powerful.
The Tony Awards honor the best plays and musicals on Broadway. They were given out at Radio City Music Hall in New York City. The American television network CBS broadcast the awards show across the country. Platt plays Evan Hansen, the lead character in the Broadway musical Dear Evan Hansen. He plays a lonely boy who writes letters to himself that say, "Today is going to be a good day." The letters make him feel better about going to school. Sunday was a really good day for Dear Evan Hansen. The show won the Tony Award for Best Musical, and its writers, Benj Pasek, Justin Paul, and Stephen Levinson, all won Tony Awards. So did actress Rachel Bay Jones, who plays Evan Hansen's mother. In her speech, Jones thanked her Nana for selling her engagement ring. That helped Jones pay for her move to New York to follow her dream of becoming an actress. A Nana is a common nickname for a grandmother. Musicals are an American invention. They tell stories through many art forms: spoken words, song, acting, and dance. Music can add an important emotional element, making an interesting story even more powerful. Platt, now 23, said he dreamed of singing in a Broadway musical since he was 6 years old. As a young boy, Platt said he performed in musicals with other family members in his family's backyard in California.
It's where I found everything I've ever loved and where I belong, and I've dreamed every day since of being on this stage and being part of this community of artists.
Hello, Dolly won the award for Best Revival of a Musical. Its star, Bette Midler, 71, won the Tony for Best Actress in a Musical. She gave a long speech and thanked many people for her success. People cheered when she continued her speech, even after the orchestra began playing music. The music signals to a speaker that their time is up. Hello, Dolly tells the story of Dolly Levi, who tries to find a wife for the unmarried businessman Horace Vandergelder. This thing has the ability to lift your spirits in these terrible, terrible times, Midler said. Also winning a big Tony honor Sunday was Oslo, a play about the 1993 Middle East peace agreement. It won the award for Best New Play. The musical Come From Away won 3 Tony Awards, among them the award for Best Director of a Musical, Christopher Ashley. Come From Away is set in Gander, Newfoundland. The small town became the temporary home for nearly 7,000 people after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. In the days after the attacks, the United States closed its airspace. International flights heading to the United States landed in Newfoundland and other Canadian airports instead. Ashley thanked the people of Newfoundland as he accepted his award. He said they were generous and kind at the very worst moments. I'm Bruce Alpert.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Nearly 790 million people around the world do not get enough to eat. Most of them live in developing countries. Many parts of the developing world do not have transportation systems in place that can bring food to people. It can be difficult to get food to those who need it without good roads and other necessary infrastructure. But there is a deeper problem. Growing or raising enough food to fight world hunger requires land. If we are talking about raising cattle for their meat, that means a lot of farmland and other resources. A group of researchers in California may have found a way to get protein to hungry people. Stephen Mayfield is a geneticist at the University of California, San Diego. He notes that many people are concerned about calories, the energy-producing value in food. Mayfield specializes in algae, the scientific term for simple plant-like organisms. He says algae have two things that the world needs: protein and lipids, or fatty acids.
The world, in fact, is not short of calories. What they're short of is proteins and essential fatty acids. So algae are naturally very high in proteins and in lipids, and those are sort of the two things that the world really needs.
So Mayfield and his team have created a dried, powdered form of algae. They break down the organisms into extremely small particles, which can help simplify the problem of transportation. Not only is the algae rich in protein and easy to transport, it also tastes good. Again, here is Mayfield.
Here's one that we've just finished up. And so what we do is we simply take this and dried it out. And as you can see, it makes a very nice green powder, and that is perfectly edible. In fact, it tastes pretty good.
And growing algae uses less land than other types of protein. Mayfield's big idea is that algae farms could one day replace the huge amounts of land used by farmers to produce protein in beef from cattle or soybeans.
I'm actually really encouraged by these new companies that have started up to make these synthetic plant-based protein substitutes that look just like meat, right? Because now, oh, that looks like something I'm familiar with. I want to eat that. But if I could make that with algae protein instead of with beef protein, an enormous environmental benefit and probably an enormous cost benefit as well.
The United States government provided money for Mayfield's research. His team just successfully finished a test in which they grew algae in an outdoor environment. Mayfield adds that algae food products are not yet available for sale. But in the future, algae may be one way to help feed the world's hungry people. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.